All right, welcome to today's call. I really want to mention if you haven't seen last week's call, I will release it next Monday. So please go check it out. We covered our buy box and why it's important. But today I want to cover real estate leverage and why it's important because it amplifies what you can do in a nutshell. Me and Anthony have been doing this for 6 years with our own capital and little to private, little, very little private capital. So we've been very, it's forced us to be as effective as possible with the private capital we have and our own capital that we have. So when you're broke, you're forced to do a lot of creative stuff. And I want to cover the amplification of that and why it's important, man. So there's a lot of investors, and for different reasons, they like buying cash or with hard money to buy assets. And it's not a bad thing, but when you're spending with your own wallet, you will always run out, and you'll run out very quickly. So that's the main thing. So you always want to be effective with your capital and where you spread it and disperse it. So me and Anthony, as we're getting more and more capital, we're being even more selective on what we're looking at because we don't want to put the capital into a bad or not amazing deal. That is the big no-no, big no-no.
So when we started off, like Daniel said, little to no capital, just whatever we had in our pockets and our bank accounts. And when you have very little money, you got to make moves like creative finance and seller finance. So we were doing that, right? When we first started, even before it blew up with Pace and people started getting real savvy to creative and seller finance, we were already negotiating these crazy deals. And when people talk to us, they're like, man, you guys are super advanced. How'd y'all learn all this? Like, just by being broke. Like just trying to move the little bit of capital that we had on hand, that's how we learned it so early because we didn't have money to buy our own deals. And then now that we have a little bit of capital laying around and we have access to a lot of private capital now, we're being even more selective about the deals that we're going into. So instead of us being more carefree to say, hey, we could make a call and grab 500 or a million now, then now we could, what does that tell you? Like instinctively, like, oh, plenty of cash. Plenty of deals to buy, right? But we're doing the opposite now. We're tightening up even further on what we're buying now. So when we look at something that we might have bought with our own cash a year ago or 2 years ago, that's a no-go today, right? Because now it's not our money, right, that we're risking. Now we're risking somebody else's money. So I think we want to start looking at being more selective about the deals that we bring in.
And this goes for everybody in your own business too. As you accelerate and grow, you always want to be more selective, because if you have a deal flow problem like we did, we have too many deals, too many opportunities, you cut things off, man. You say no to even okay deals. You want the best of the best, and that's okay. So I really want you to be we all want you to grow as investors and get better over time, but you got to stretch that capital, man. Stretch as much as you can. Now, here's the biggest reason why: enhance return on investment. That is the biggest, probably one of the biggest things we get is we one of the first deals we did, seven figures, we leveraged a $1 million property with $200,000 down. Now there's people out there that are buying $200,000 houses and flipping that into 350 or 400,000, but they have to put another 50, 60 grand in repairs or whatever that looks like. So there's people out there leveraging that 200 to buy a flip house, where we're trying to get as max value on the ROI. So if we can, and I think that first deal we did pretty well on. So it's always leveraging the capital you have into to get the best ROI possible. So if we bought $1 million cash and it turns to 1.5, hey, it's a good 50% return if it took us a year. But if you leverage that with 200,000, you got a 150% return versus a 50%. So the math matters. And the numbers matter of how much capital you're actually putting into each deal, just because it's important, man.
Let me give them a framework real quick because you guys are out there looking at a lot of deals. I hope you
Yep.
are. We're looking, if you spend a dollar, you need to be able to make back two, right? So if you buy something for 10,000, you need to be able to sell it for about 20. Why? Because if you buy something, let's say you have something that's worth 100,000 retail if it was listed, right, for a few months, and you buy it for 70,000, right? You pay 6% in agent commissions, holding costs, taxes, everything else, you pretty much made zero. Right. So there's no
Lender,
way. Yeah. What's that?
lender, lender, and unforeseen costs will eat up all your profit.
Yeah. unforeseen costs. Yeah, you think you're going to make 50 grand and the deal kind of comes apart, some things go wrong, or you need to fire sell it. And now instead of making 50, you make 20 or 30, right? So if you're only planning to make a 30% gain, that 30% can turn into zero quickly. The good news is, like, if you're looking for a smaller deal, you know, 40,000, it'd be a little tougher to find something for 40, sell for 80, which we found one today we're going to buy. Those are harder to find, right? But when you get into the bigger deals, right, buy something for 500, it's a lot easier to sell it for a million, right? Because you have a lot more leverage when you have a bigger property. And I think that's something that Daniel might cover today too. And of course, I'll be jumping in.
Yeah. So enhanced ROI is the first one. Number two is access to larger properties. So I kind of alluded to that a second ago, but you can get into a larger asset class with six figures. So for instance, the first seven-figure deal we did, we got into it with 200,000. So just buying that, just doing that alone, we can leverage into our bigger property. So our goal is, as we get more capital, we're going to leverage it into larger, even larger deals. Like, I think the biggest one we've done is the Poteet might turn into like a $10 million deal, but that's hitting, was it eight figures now? So we might be doing that a little bit more often, leveraging into larger assets with more money down. But it gives you the ability to get into that position with large sum of capital. So you can afford to put some money down on a property and still get access to some good leverage.
Let's go in the extreme opposite direction, right? So as the deals get bigger, your leverage gets bigger. So I'm looking at 500 acres north of San Antonio, and they want 15 million. Okay, 29,000 acre, I think, is a great price for the area. But if you're buying 500 acres, it should come down tremendously, right? So that might be a deal that, of course, we're not going to pay that cash. I just don't think the spread is there and the risk is there for us to throw 15 million into one deal plus development costs. But what the seller has agreed to verbally is that they would hold the property while we develop it out. So now if we come in and we bring in 5 or 6 million worth of roads and a couple million worth of water lines, I think all of our development into the deal could be somewhere between 10 and 12 million. And then the profit on the back end is pushing close to 60 million, right? So you couldn't get a 6x return on a $100,000 deal. There's no way you're going to buy something for 100 and sell it for 600. But when you negotiate a deal like that, that's worth that in a hot area, right? That's worth 5 or 10 or 15 million. We probably would never buy that cash, at least not at this point in our career. But if the seller's willing to hold it and let us put cash into the deal, now we're talking. Bryce Smith got one of those. He has like a $5 or $6 million lot in Anna, Texas. Again, we wouldn't buy that cash, right, for that price in that area. But it's a good area. But the seller's willing to give us almost 2 years to complete the development on it. So again, now we're talking. We sent a contract on it, right? So it all depends on what you negotiate on your end.
And this is one of the big reasons why like novations are popular and these like partnership JV deals where the seller brings the land. Those are super great deals because if we can just bring the capital to value at it and lock them in at a price, I mean, everybody gets paid at that time and we can make a huge, huge ROI on that. So if we can get into a deal with no money down and just put up the engineering costs, that's an amazing opportunity. If we can get a novation and list that property with and repair, do some minimal repairs or value add and list that property until it exits, I mean, that's why those opportunities are so great and they're up and coming, especially in this market where I think we're heading to. There's such a great opportunity and strategy to use in your real estate investments. All right. So I hope you all, if you have any questions, you can put it in the chat too. Are there different types of novations? There might be like I think I covered this on the navigating the offer. This is like a partner novation and there's just like a novation. So a partner novation is more of like they bring the property, you bring your skill set. And then like a JV novation is you might split profits. But there's little like hitting variations of that. And that's where you can still bring it to market and not leverage bringing all the capital to the closing table. So great question, Angie. All right. So this is a big one. Me and Anthony talk about this a lot too. Capital appreciation. So if you lock up a property long enough and the property appreciates, you get that upside. So we always, the longer you get that contract, and the longer we get into deals, the more upside we get into it in most cases, because usually the property is appreciating, there are new comps. If interest rates drop, there's more cash in the market and we're into that deal. We have a 6-month contract. Guess what? Our valuation might go up. So if you can get into bigger deals and bigger opportunity with long-term contracts, very, very super important. All right. It's usually upfront. It's one of the offers we're going to make. So usually while we're probing the agent or seller, Angie asks, what do you typically offer an ovation opportunity? It's usually upfront. We're gauging like, hey, how soon did you need to sell? We're asking probing questions to kind of figure out, oh, they're not in a rush to sell. Okay. Would they be interested of us putting some money down as security and us value adding the property? It's usually upfront before we even send a contract. We're doing a lot of this probing upfront. So this is a good question where if you're doing some outreach, ask if we can bring our skill set and value adding the property, and they can just bring the land. It's definitely on the front end of the conversation.
Look, Andrew just brought me one, 420 acres south of San Antonio. It's listed for like 2.8 or 2.9. I get on the phone with the agent and, you know, we're talking a little bit, and I said, hey, you know, what are they thinking? When do they need to be paid by? Like, is anybody in a hurry to close? And I always ask this to seller, agent, anybody. Are we trying to hit any specific deadlines? Are we facing foreclosures, any kind of tax problems, divorce? Is it in court? No, none of that stuff. None of that stuff. Okay. So they're not in a real hurry to get the capital is what it sounds like. No, not really. They've owned this thing for 30 years. Okay, I told her, because here's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to make two offers. I said, one's going to be a lower cash offer. I said, I don't want to offend anybody. I said, but I got to send it. I'm going to send a cash offer. I said, and then my second offer, I said, is going to be a lot closer to your listing price, but it's going to have me putting some kind of down payment and paying it off in about 2 years. And she was already pretty hip. She said, hey, so are you going to need a partial release of lien, you know, as you guys move this thing? I said, you know, that's not the only way we do it. I said, what I'm going to do, I said, is I'm going to give you a down payment. I'm going to spend about $500,000 in engineering. I might put in a couple roads. I said, but once this thing's ready for approval to break ground, once I have all the approvals with the county, the city, everybody, then I could refi out of the deal and just pay you guys off once I get that far. I said, so I don't need financing for that long. And she said, okay, that sounds great. Send it over. So that's kind of like a soft pitch on innovation. It's like, hey, you're going to sign the property over to me. I'm going to do a couple of things to it, and I'm going to get us both our money. How does that sound?
Yeah, that's huge. Huge, huge opportunity. And that's what I'm working right now, right, Anthony? With that seller? With Andrew?
Yeah, I just drove it like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing, amazing property. It's a really nice property. It's like it's listed for 6,000 an acre in an area where stuff's selling for at least double. And we're going to hit them even lower. I'm probably going to hit them, you know, 25 to 30% lower than what they have it listed for. So I'm going to aim for about 5,000 an acre, maybe do like 10% down, and then pay off in about 24 months. That's a huge, beautiful property. It has a water well on there that pumps 1,100 gallons per minute. There's a 15-acre lake on property that's drained. And the guy that takes care of the ranch was there. Luckily, we got there. There was an Alberto there. He goes, oh, that pump will probably fill up that lake in 2 days. So that property already comes with its own water company. You know, it's probably like a $200,000 well.
Yeah.
If not more.
Frank asks, they're not in a rush to sell. I always ask, and why is it listed? So there's always underlying, and this is one of the reasons why I love like listed properties, is if it's on the MLS, they have a motivation to sell. It might not be upfront in what they're asking, but they're ready to move the cash. Or I talk about this in another call too. But when people are ready to sell, they're ready to move the cash, they're ready to move to another asset, or they're ready to move to another investment. They're moving that capital somewhere else, so they're trying to liquidate. So just by them being on the MLS, they have some underlying motivation. And a lot of them are older too. They don't necessarily need the cash, and they just looking to move it in some other asset. So that Greenville deal we did, that seller owned like 2,000 acres. And what she would do is she would, as the population grew around certain areas, she would buy a little further out and hold it. And she would kind of phase in all these little land holdings over time and distance. So these big land sellers, they're just moving capital and waiting.
Was it Edward today that had that hundreds of 400 acres where the seller said they want to get rid of the land so they can move into a cash flowing asset like a shopping center? See, and me and Daniel were just chuckling, right? If you buy a shopping center, you got like a 6 cap or 7 cap, you killed it. Like you stole that thing. And all day long, we're writing like 10 and 12% loans, like almost double what a shopping center would provide.
Yeah. Yep. So a deal like that, we might offer them an ROI on their capital so they don't have to actually move that capital somewhere else. Just keeps them in the deal. So as long as you know how to make a bigger ROI than what they're getting or they're wanting to get, and then have to deal with the management of it, you might have an opportunity there. All right, inflation hedge. So this is one of the bit. I'm going to talk about this, Marvin. Good job, Ed, Marvin and Edward. So this is another reason why seller financing is dope. So like, what we pitch this to sellers all the time is that, especially this is for everybody that's selling properties, a reason why they want seller financing is because they want leverage too. Yes, it's high interest, but property appreciates and there's new comps. A, they can refinance out that property and get better debt in the future, but at least they have their deal locked in now and they can refinance out in the future. But two, if the property appreciates, I mean, they can sell a thing for whatever and they can leverage our financing to get an ROI in the back end. So I think Anthony's pitched that one a few times to sellers where he'll be like, man, as soon as I do this, this, and this, this value of the property is going to be way more than what I'm selling it to you for. So you better buy it now. You want to cover that story, Anthony?
Hey, which one was it?
It's the one where you pitch sellers to buy the property because you're going to make it more valuable.
What was there? Was there one in particular, one special one?
You did it to the boutique buyer, the one buying the 30.
That I what? Man,
The one buying the 30 acres. You did it to the boutique buyer.
I don't remember what I did.
What happens. That's what happens when you do. You're always negotiating.
Know,
Essentially,
dude. Every single deal is just something.
Anthony with that one is he they only wanted 20 acres and Anthony upsold them into 30. And
Oh, okay. On the 243.
yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I showed them what we were going to do. I showed them the breakdown of the individual lots and what we were going to do to the property. And I showed them on paper. I said, look, what you guys are getting for 600,000, they were only going to spend 320 or 340 or something. And I upsold them to 600. And I said, look, what you guys are getting for 600, I said, it's going to, it's, if I broke it all up and sold it, it's like $2 million. It was like 1.8 or 1.7 million. I said, so you guys are getting a huge discount by buying it in bulk. I was like, so, you know, like I can't wait past today. I said, but if you guys want to do it, let's do it. They said, yeah, for sure. They're ready. They'll do it. Ready to close cash.
So Anthony, I think we need to, with that one, we need to hit him back with an option to buy it in like 3 years to buy it for double the price.
That's not a bad idea.
Because
Yeah,
we
because
can.
by the time we get to that phase of the development, it would make sense to buy it back from them and break it down further.
Absolutely. And it wouldn't even cost that much to do it. Because it's already in our cost. Just side notes. Options. Leverage options. Options are very underrated. If you don't know what a real estate option is, go learn about it, watch some YouTube videos about it. But if you know you're gonna increase the value in a certain area for whatever reason, get an option on it to buy it back. Little tidbit right there. Building equity through amortization. This is probably a great one for seller financing. So we're always trying to get 0% interest. So amortization means everything goes to principal. So we're always trying to pay as little interest as possible. That way most of the payment goes to principal. Doesn't do that when we sell, but when we buy, we're always looking for seller financing to knock down that payment down as much as possible. And then one thing me and Anthony talk about this too is once you get a seller to seller finance, that's not the last part of negotiation. That's just today's negotiation. Every time they're the bank, you can send them an email right before Christmas and tell them, hey, would you like to sell me some payments? And you can renegotiate yearly. Or if they ever need cash, you can buy some payments back to even buy down your property even further. So when you have a seller as a bank, you can negotiate every year, every month, whenever you want, and buy down to that deal little by little to knock out the equity. So seller financing is huge, man, when you're buying through amortization. You want to cover a little more on that one, Anthony?
On amortization.
Yeah, renegotiating terms with sellers. After you get seller financing.
Yeah, so that's a cool thing about getting seller financing, right? As opposed to going and getting institutional capital, right? So you go, people ask us all the time if we want hard money and all this stuff, and you know, can you fill this out and I'll get you guys some capital. We've never asked anybody to borrow money like that, like from an institution or a bank or anything like that. Not even hard money. It's all been private. And the reason is because that's the best loan that you could possibly get. Like most of the time, we're getting 0% interest, you know, those kinds of things. But what you can do is like we have one right now, we have an 18-month balloon on it, which is fine. We get still pay it off at the 18 months like we agreed to. But since you're dealing with an individual, you can always change the terms as you go. You know, 6 months in, we could say, hey, I'll give you 12 payments up front, you know, if you can extend the contract for 6 months for me, right? The balloon. Or you can say, hey, I'll give you, you know, 50% of what I owe you tomorrow if you can extend for me for 5 more years, right? So you can always modify as you go. Just what you sign a contract on that day is what you're promising to stick to, and we're going to keep our word for sure. But it's always, you can always modify as you go. Like, you can make the deal better and better as you go. Like, literally, that deal can continue to get better for the next several years. You can get better every 6 months. So just negotiating something, getting something on paper, starting the relationship, and then you can just modify as you go.
Yeah. So huge, huge leverage. Anybody else have any questions about that or anything we've covered so far? I don't want to get too far ahead. You guys had some good questions on this. So we're covering today, for people that came in a little late, the why seller financing is important. All right. No questions. All right. So
we're getting to the point almost not even doing cash at all unless it's a crazy price.
Yeah.
It has to be just like a really cool 50 cents on the dollar price for us to just pay cash, especially if you're paying 500 or a million. All right. So always thinking about seller financing creative, that should be your first offer. Right, before you even go into a cash offer. And if this agent's, of course, the agent's going to say, well, they're just looking for cash. Okay. I said, but you may not like my cash offer, just FYI. And I don't want to offend anybody. It just is what it is.
So the biggest thing about this is you can get some type of seller financing on every deal. It doesn't matter how much it is. You can get some type of seller financing. I don't understand, because everybody has equity. If you got to wipe out a bank and give them $100,000 in their pocket and they can leverage 20% of the property, that's still an opportunity because you're not putting the full thing up front cash. So you always want to get some type of seller financing. The bigger, the better, of course. But even if you only get 30%, somebody sent us one where they wanted $600,000 for a property with $400,000 down. And there's opportunity to value add. So even something like that, leveraging $200,000 seller finance is still huge. So don't miss on seller financing, because sellers will do it for the right terms.
It's all mindset too, because we'll see the same people that come back over and over again, and they say, oh, they said no to seller finance. There's somebody on this call right now. He said no to seller finance, and I said, send the offer anyway. Now we're negotiating seller finance. We offered 10% down. They said they're probably going to take it, and then they said, hey, can you guys do 20? I said, yes, but our overall offer price is going to come down. Right. So you take something, we take something every single time. But you can always, there's always a happy middle ground. And no matter what somebody says to your offer, you didn't hear it. You're still going to make your two or three offers anyway.
Yep.
No matter what they say, hell, no seller finance allowed. Fantastic. But I have to send one. My boss makes me. I have to send you a cash offer, and I have to send you a seller finance offer, no matter what. Just look at both of them. I don't care if you even look at the seller finance one. I'm just going to send it anyway. We're always going to do what we're going to do no matter what, guys. We're like robots. We're cranking out the same effort over and over and over again, and we don't care what they say on their side.
It gets the wheels turning, and the whole point of sending the offer is now they have it in front of them, and they're just going to like, okay, I get more money here, but I have all this equity. I get payments, and it gets the wheels turning in their head. So it's just all it is psychology getting in their head, in the seller's head. And as far as like what our base offer is, usually 50 cents on the dollar. I'm going to cover like the offer too, because this is important. This is why we even make this offer. This is something crazy. So 50 cents on the dollar, and this is based off of what you think it's worth, based off of if it's already subdivided or whatever it is, 50 cents on the dollar, or the 10% down, 360 equal monthly payments. I always say equal monthly payments. Equal monthly payments always alludes to 0% financing. So if you do equal monthly payments, always say that in your letter. So let's say $1 million.
Yes.
You'd make an offer for 500 or 1 million purchase with $100,000 down. Cause now there's a big discrepancy. Like, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Why would they make that offer? It doesn't make sense. Like, why would they do 500 cash or 1 million seller finance? They might not even understand the reasoning why, and it gets their mind thinking. So if it's $1 million property, $500,000 cash, we can close in 90 days, or $1 million with 10% down, $100,000 down, 360 equal payments. What's your question?
I was going to say today, just real quick.
Hey.
That same seller, they said, hey, how much interest are you guys going to pay? And I said to respond, 0% interest. Because if you guys add interest, that's going to bring down our overall sales price. again, so anytime they ask for anything, you take something back. Just
I really want to hit on that too. This is the base and before, hold on, Al, 1 second. This is a tug of war. So whenever they pull back, which they are, because they're not going to like both those offers in most cases, no one has ever said yes on that first offer, not at least that I know of. So it's a tug of war. They're going to pull back and you pull back. So if they want a larger down payment, hey, the purchase price goes down. This is what it is. Hey, we need longer terms. Boom. So when they pull, you pull. Go ahead, Al.
Hey, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. It was great that Anthony mentioned that sometimes agents don't know what they're talking about, because I actually spoke to a seller agent today, and I gave a 10% down offer on like an 18-month amortization. And they responded that the seller initially thought they'd be due to seller financing, but they said, no, they can't do it because it's already on the note. So I said, cool, well, can we put 10% down on the note, purchase the note instead? And the agent responded and said, no, that's not going to work. And I kind of thought that was odd, like, you know, well, how could that not work? You know, I would assume the note would be purchased, but I didn't really question it. And then the agent I was speaking to said, well, you can circle back to it later. But it's just to piggyback off what was Anthony was saying in regards to the agents don't know, in regards to the possibilities of creating finances. That's definitely something I will follow back up on after listening to you guys.
So when there's a loan in place, you can do a couple things. So if the deal is sweet enough, we might cover that loan and put money in their pocket where they can seller finance the majority of it. So let's go like that $1 million property. Let's say they have a loan for 200 grand. Hey, what if we gave you 200 to wipe out the loan and 200 in your pocket? How does that sound? Like it depends on what the loan amount is and how much equity there is and what they're buying with. If they have a large loan on that property, let's say back to the $1 million, they have an $800,000 loan and they have good debt on that property, we might try and take over that loan sub two and give them 50 to 100 grand and then have them carry the rest, because they don't necessarily have a lot of equity to make that 200 grand. So we can still leverage them at them getting that note. We'll do that too. So for instance, we did a deal in Florida last year. We purchased it for $330, I believe. Purchased it for $330. There was underlying loan for $240. I can't remember the numbers. It was like $230, $240. I can't remember exactly. So that one we did cash for keys. We paid the seller 10 grand. She had like 75K in equity or so. We gave her 10 grand in her pocket to sign over. And then we gave her the rest of her equity whenever she vacated. So once she vacated the property, we gave her her amount, and then we took over the loan sub two. We sold that note. We ended up selling the property and we were projecting 100 grand. We ended up making 50. And this is one of the reasons why if you buy deep. So to get in that deal was literally 10 grand. It was a risk we're willing to take to get into that deal to make 100. And that's where that equity, like cash reserve comes in, and why seller financing is important. So you always want to make sure you balance how much the loan is versus how much equity they have versus the asking price they're asking. And then you can do, if they have a big loan and no equity, you can do something subject to. If they have a smaller loan, we might be able to wipe that out and have them still seller finance a big portion of their equity.
Yeah. So another thing I was going to say is there's no rules to this game, right? As long as you're behaving legally and ethically, there's no board that approves the loan or the terms that you agree with the seller.
Yep.
Right. So if let's say they did have monthly payment in place, right? That's, I don't know, 2 grand a month. What we've offered before is, hey, look, why don't we do this? Why don't I come in? I'll fix up the property. I'll make some improvements. I'll do everything I'm going to do on my side. And in the meantime, I'll pay the mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. So now we picked up their mortgage payment. That relieves them of that, especially if they're not using the property. And then, you know, that's one strategy. Also, like Daniel said, you can give them some upfront money to say, look, it sounds like you need about 15, 20 grand in your pocket right this second. And then also what I can do to help is I can pick up the mortgage payment, so you don't have to pay anything at all per month right now. And then it'll take me about 90 days to 180 days to get this thing paid off and get you your money. How does that sound? Right. So you can pretty much negotiate anything. Today we're making an offer. I don't know if Daphne's on here, but we're making an offer where we would, the seller says, no, I can't sell because I owe $10,000 in back taxes. Okay, that's fine. What if we paid the $10,000? How much do you need to put in your pocket? Right. So there's a million ways that you can cut this up, but there's no correct way to do it. It's just whatever you can negotiate and agree with the seller, you know, and then considering how much equity they have, how much profit you're trying to make, what your risk is, right? Because if you're going to throw out again, 100 grand to try to make 10 or 5 or whatever, then it just doesn't make sense. Then you might just get an innovation where you just have permission to just sell it for them.
And that's, I really want to dig into that real quick. So a novation is a perfect setup for that. So let's say they have an underlying loan and for whatever reason they can't pay it, whether it's 2,000 or 5,000, you can come in, hey, let me help you carry this payment, that 2,000 to 5,000 a month, and then let's lock in our price, and then I'll help you make sure you get cashed out and the underlying loan is taken care of. So for instance, let's say it's a $500,000 property, there's an underlying loan of 250 and it's 2 grand a month, and they're trying to get it for 400, you lock them in at 375, pay the 2 grand a month and sell that thing for whatever the ARV is. Now you're only in, you carry that loan for 6 months, you're only in 12, 15 grand. And if you have to add paperwork or paint if it's a house or whatever it is, all you have to do is put in that little capital instead of buying the whole thing outright. You're leveraging them as having a note. It's huge. And you're taking care of that balance so it's longer on their head for however many months, and then you do a listing agreement to list the property, and everybody exits out at their price point, and everybody wins. Angie asks, how do you find out if you could take over a note? Talk to the seller, talk to the agent. There's a lot of like rules with subject to and stuff like that. I would talk to like an attorney, depending on what type of deal it is and how much equity there is, just to make sure everybody's covered. Because the one seller in Florida that we did that deal with in Florida, when we initially gave them the cash, they were asking us for more cash in the middle of it. And I'm like, hey, I can't give you any more cash till you vacate the property. And it is what it is. So they thought we were scamming them because we gave them $10,000 and took over the deed. I was like, no, like, we're not scamming you. It's like, once you vacate the property, we'll give you the money. It's not a problem. It's just, once you give them the money, they have no urgency to leave. So you got to make sure you're upfront with the terms and everybody's on the same page in a transaction like that, because it can get misunderstandings and you can get sued and lawsuits and all this stuff. So you always want to be over explaining all this stuff, because you don't want to have a lawsuit on your hands later. Great questions, though. But novations are huge, man. Learn about novations. They're super, super powerful. If you can do... What was that one deal you did, Anthony, that was like early... It was a couple years ago. But you did some type of like novation. You gave her like... Is this a China lady? You gave her like 10, 20 grand up front, and then she deeded you the property?
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of them like that. Yeah, where... She needed, I forgot what her number is. She's like 225, 250. But I asked her, like, what do you need to get in your hand right now so to be okay, where you don't have any stress on your plate right now? And she said, I just need $10,000. So that's it. I had my attorney drop a contract, like a sell contract, purchase and sell agreement, $10,000 down, no payments, no interest until sold. Yep. So I gave her the $10,000, property went in my name, and we immediately turned around, sold it to the neighbor, you know, for almost 100K profit. So those kinds of deals that are out there, again, just trying to figure out, and you have to be sincere, right? It sounds like we're, you know, asking all these specific questions to lead down this quote, like sell. And I wish we had better sales tactics like Steve Trang, but it's just basic, like, you know, rapport. Just like, hey, what do you need to put in your pocket right now? If I can help you, I will. If I can't, I won't. And then I use that to kind of reverse people too on their urgency, right? So you're talking to somebody and you know what they're going to say is like, I just need to get my cash and that's all I want. Okay, cool. You know, do you have anything happening? Like, are you facing foreclosure? Do you have any kind of like debt, something you're trying to pay off? Like, are you trying to beat the clock here? So you're trying to make them seem like they're like asking them if they're desperate to sell to get a huge discount. So what do? Right. They go into defense mode automatically and they start saying things like, no, I've owned the property forever. I don't have to sell it. I can hang on to it for another 20 years and I'll be okay. I'll say, and then I let them know right away. I'm like, oh, that's great news. It sounds like you're not in a hurry to sell, because I'm not in a hurry to buy. I like to buy very slowly and very methodically to make sure that I don't make any mistakes, right? Because I'm a little company, and if I make one big mistake, that could be the end of my company. So I'm glad you're not in a hurry. That helps me a lot. Is it okay if I write it up for a 90-day close, 120-day close, a six-month close? And that's it. Now they've already told you over and over again that they're not in a hurry. So you say, okay, that's amazing. That's awesome. Because if you can give me some time to close, I don't have to go to a bank to find the money. I could just wait till one of my other property sells and then give you that cash. So that gives you an extended closing period by asking those questions.
Well, Anthony's so brilliant about that, because he backs into the conversation by being direct, which is the normal way people go in. but they don't have that back end angle where he's just asking for time. Because the longer we have these deals, the more we can value add the property itself, a chunk of it, do a lot of crazy stuff with land, and it just makes the opportunity more makes the deal a better deal, 100% with more time.
You know, I'll tell you why too, because we don't have to go borrow the money, right? I'm closing on a couple of acres here in San Antonio, and it's 90,000, right? So I'm gonna go have to borrow that money from somewhere, 90 grand, and pay back 5 grand or 10 grand, whatever that money costs. So now that property is costing me 100. Right. But I called one of my old buyers that bought a property from me and that on the next street. And he said he'll go ahead and pick it up for 110. So now I got to borrow zero, make a quick 20 grand. So if somebody says they're in a real hurry, I got to get the money quick. Okay, cool. I need a discount because I'm going to go borrow that money. Even with the money sitting in my bank account, I'm still going to go borrow it. We covered this with the Gator lending, right? I forgot what the number. Me and Daniel were running numbers on earnest money last year. We had like $300,000 in earnest money last year, some of it which we lost, right? So we always make sure to leverage no matter what. It's like if you have 100 grand in your bank account and you lock up 10 deals or 15 deals, now your bank account says zero because you got all your cash out in earnest money. It'd be smarter for you to hang on to your 100 grand, borrow the earnest money, and then just pay that lender back when the deal closes. Now you're not having to take it out of your own pocket so you can stay liquid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, leverage is huge, and if you learn how to use it right, it could take you very, very far. Very, very far. I'm excited about the opportunities we'll be able to do pretty soon, but leverage is very, very important. It can make you a good investor, a great investor overnight. Good questions today. We covered a lot of different stuff. Novations are powerful. We've done a couple of those. Those have been great opportunities. We haven't done it lately. Maybe we need to do a little bit more novations, Anthony. We haven't done one probably in a year. Or we haven't done one.
We've been doing more seller finance type stuff.
Yeah, we're doing more seller financing. Have you found many commercial land deals? We have one working. I do not recommend going in it to it early on. And even us, we're kind of on our toes about the one deal we have. It's taking a long time to unlock that value.
Yeah, going on a year's contract, and I say I got about $75,000 in engineering, and I probably got another $50,000 coming for engineering, just FYI. So commercial is a whole different beast. It's very subjective. So somebody says, I have an acre downtown Dallas, and I got to get $2 million for it because you can build an apartment complex here. Like, you can't do anything there until the county and the city says you can. Yep. So if somebody brings you a deal and like, you could do this and you can do this and you can do this, do you have all those approvals from the county and the city that says you could build that?
Well, no,
but you can because they built one next door. So then you can't do that there. You can't do that there until you have the approvals that say that you can, because anything can go wrong on that deal. It could be a waste dump there. There's a lot of areas in town in San Antonio where they buried trash there 100 years ago. So you start digging into the ground and there's just car parts and crap under there. So commercial and all that stuff, it gets very, very subjective as to what the value is. It's very hard to tell what something could be worth. So I say if you're new, just stay away from it. Yep. The way that we will approach commercial is the way that we're doing the one that we have now. It's 15 and a half acres. It's $4.5 million. We got a year to close and the seller's willing to extend for another year as long as he can see that we're making progress. So I met with the engineers today. We have a ton of progress. But we're not going to go and buy 2 acres for $2 million and then put $500,000 worth of engineering into it. And then the city shoots it down. It just doesn't make sense for anybody. So the way that we will do commercial, if the seller is willing to hold it while we improve it, while we'll pay the engineers, we'll do the surveys, we'll do everything, we'll market it, we'll do all that stuff, and we'll pay the seller when we get paid. But typically on commercial, we just do not buy outright.
Yep, it's a lot of risk. And we've been sent deals like, oh, great commercial deal. Close in 30 days. I'm like, hey, I'm good.
Yeah. Somebody goes, yeah, this commercial deal is $9 million and it has to close by the 21st, like in 10 days. Like, come on, man. What do you think this is? And you have no paperwork for it, no engineering, no nothing. Like, that's a funny question to get.
So I wanted to hit on that one too.
Because commercial deals, they're typically $8 million if you look on, you know, one of the commercial websites. The rest of it's a wholesaler's fee that they added on.
Yeah, the broker adds it. There, the broker adds a fee. So we have actually a friend of mine here in San Antonio. We're going to have to talk about this one if it comes to close. But Daphne offered half of the listing price, and the seller's probably going to take it, maybe less than half. You know, so yeah, by the time the brokers and the agents get a hold of it and wholesalers, yeah, they just marked it up crazy. This is where the numbers don't even make sense anymore.
I really want to hit on this too. So if you work with a lot of land wholesalers, or if you check like Investor Lift, like, oh, I got sent one today. Bless his heart. He sent me one. It's like, it could be used for a 9-unit and it was 10,000 square foot lot. And I look it up and it says residential. And I'm like, bro, just because it can be used as a 9-unit doesn't mean it's going to be used as a 9-unit.
Like, yeah, you say, a hospital will fit on this lot. Like, no, because it's in a residential neighborhood.
Oh, man. So always look out for that stuff. It's semi-annoying, but I'm used to it at this point. It's part of doing business. Edward says three acres for $15 million. If it's Vegas on the Strip, maybe.
Yeah, it really depends on where that one is, right? Somebody sent me one, like probably like an hour west of Fort Worth, like 33 acres for $7 million. I'm like, I think the sellers are just messing with these kids now when they get a phone call. They're like, let's just blow this kid's mind and tell him we want $300,000 an acre in the middle of nowhere. Angie was asking, return on effort for minor subdivides versus big entitlement deals like flipping to a developer. I'm entitling 243 acres right now, and the engineering is going to be almost $500,000, right? Our target on this deal, if we sell it out early to a developer, I'm trying to cash out somewhere between $2 and $3 million profit. If we go ahead and break ground, throw in the roads and the water lines, you know, we're looking like at 2 years from now, and then the total sales on that one, we should make like $6 or $7 million, right? So think about those timelines versus return. So I'll take those $2 million tomorrow versus $7 million 2 or 3 years from now. And then, you know, a little deal can be a big deal, right? So it just really depends on what you're looking at. 5.5 acres we're working on in Floresville right now. We picked up for $200,000, and the seller agreed to close upon approval of the subdivision. So now we're like 6 months into this thing, and maybe $35,000 or $40,000, and there's going to be about $380,000 profit on that deal. That's one we'll take all day long. You know, locked up properly on the front end, very little money out of pocket, almost a 10x return. You know, so that's a perfect deal. We'll take those all day.
So this is the thing where, like, the minor subdivides, we like those. They take a little bit longer, but we're not actually working for that. We're just waiting. So if you don't mind waiting for ROI, that's what all entitlements and subdivides are for.
Yeah, well, we talked about this today, right? We're looking for a 2x return. If I spend $50, I want back $100, right? Or I'm not going to buy it. Yeah. So in terms of this deal, we're getting a 10x return. We're spending $38,000 to make $380,000, right? So that's something to consider. They were asking, how do we structure the numbers with the property owner when you're asking them to hold it? This is where you can really, really play with the numbers. Yep. So that 5-acre tract retail as is probably only worth $200 or $250.
It's only worth $200 as is.
Yeah. And so we knew damn well that we could subdivide it because it had a ton of road frontage on it. We did the math on the lots. Yep, sounds like $500,000 or $600,000 sell price. So if that seller is just adamant, like, I got to get my whole $250, I'm not going to go below, I'm going to hold my breath for 20 years. If I don't get my $250, I'm never going to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I know how to get you that $250, but it's going to take me about 6 months. If not, I'm at $150, $175 cash. Which one would you rather look at? Would you rather look at that cash offer to close quick? Or would you rather give me 6 months so I can get you the whole $250? And then let them decide. You know, sometimes they'll be like, nope, if you get me $175 next Tuesday, I'm taking it. Perfect. Get it. We're done.
So in both those are wins. So like if it was worth $200, we might have bought that for $100 cash. So $100 cash, $380 exit, that's still a 3x return. We're still doing amazing. But now they're stuck on that number. By us paying more, we make a higher ROI. How does that make sense?
Yeah. So we're paying them to wait with us is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right. If they want money today, we get a lot of you guys that come and tell us, hey, they said they want to close in 30 days. They want to close in 21 days for $4 million. Like, probably not going to happen for one, right? Unless it is 40 or 50 cents on the dollar. But, you know, what are they willing to do to get that full price amount? This is a question I always ask is, can you give me a little bit of time? Like, say, hey, I'm going to send you a cash offer. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I'm in business and I got kids and I don't want to go broke because if my kids go broke and they can't eat, and, you know, might upset mom. So I'm going to make a cash offer. I don't want to hurt your feelings at all. It's just business. And I'm also going to send you a second offer that gets a lot closer to what you're already asking. So I want you to take a look at that for me. Or I'll ask them up front to say, hey, let me ask you a question real quick. You sound like you're not in a hurry. You said you're not in a hurry at all. Can you give me about 6 to 12 months to pay this property off? What do you mean? Let me draw something up and I'll send it over to you so you can look at it while we're talking on the phone. That's it. Done.
Yep. Easy peasy. So to answer your question in a nutshell, Andrew, we like them both. They're both going to be pretty good.
Yeah, let the seller pick. Let the seller pick what they want. And you'd be surprised. Like I said, and it's getting on their level, being on their side, you know, talking to them and then saying, I bet you had a lot of people make you offers on this property, right? It sounds like you've talked to a lot of people that have been trying to buy it. Oh, yeah, everybody calls me about my property. Yeah, well, you know, when the offer that I'm going to send you, the number might not look like those other offers. I just want to forewarn you. It might be a little bit lower. It might be a lot lower. But I'll tell you, the number that I send you is a number that I'm prepared to close on. Have you ever had somebody contract this property at that price and then come closing day, they disappeared on you? They stopped answering your phone calls? Oh, yeah. It's already happened a couple of times. Yeah, I figured. The number I send you is the number that I'm prepared to close on. And I'll even give you $5,000 or $10,000 the day you sign the contract to let you know that I am going to close. And then I'm in business. And that's it. So that's especially a good workaround for when they say, oh, I've got a bunch of offers on the table right now. I got tons of people. I got 4 offers on my table right now. Can you get those offers in front of you real quick so we can talk about them? Yeah. Say any of those offers say that they're going to give you $10,000 a day you sign the contract?
No, none of them. They're all refundable.
Yeah. All of them say that. None of them say that, right? No, none of them say that. Then they're not real offers. You should probably place them into the recycle bin, right? When the number I send to you is the number I'm going to close on, and I'll give you money the day you sign the contract. I'll send it to your bank account.
So one thing that we'd really dig in on is we offer refundable, non-refundable deposits, because usually it's worth, if we can get the timeline we need, it doesn't really matter. We'll get the terms we want by using refundable deposits. So a lot of investors, they're afraid to lose money. So everything's non-refundable. I mean, day one of wholesaling, me and Anthony took the same course. They told you to use under $100 and still get it refundable.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how we knock off a lot of wholesalers off the table, right? These people think, well, I've got 4 offers I'm thinking about right now. I'm talking to 2 other people right now. Perfect, but I'll tell you something. Our offer is going to say that theirs is not. We're going to send you some cash up front. And the cash we send you up front is yours to keep. So if I don't do exactly what I say I'm going to do, then that's your money.
So, right? Angie, what we'll do is we'll write them a check right there. So this is when we know it's a deal. If we're making great terms and we know it's a deal, we'll give them $10,000. Cash or a check, right?
$120,000.
Yeah, or $120,000. It depends on how big it is, because if we know we're gonna go to close, and this is we talk about this on another call, but so a lot of people are risk averse to give Candler capital because they're not going to get it back in most cases, which you're not wrong there, but on the adverse side of it, if you give somebody non-refundable cash, now you're stuck in the deal.
Now we're married
because you took that cash and spent it.
Yeah, worst case, they go out, they spend your money, like somebody did last year. I sent them $26,000 before closing, right? And every guru in the book, all of them, are going to tell you don't ever do that. So this is 301, 303 stuff, right? This is not beginner stuff. But I gave them $26,000 and they didn't show up the day to close. They actually emailed me like the morning of or the morning before, like, I hereby terminate my contract. Oh, no, you don't. Now we're suing them, right? And now they're ready to close. So once you give them that money and they take it, that money's gone. I mean, your property's pretty much yours now.
Yeah, and it's at the price you got it minus damages. So if you're really want to marry that deal, give them non-refundable deposit, because once they take it and spend it, you're married into that deal and you're going to get that deal no matter what. Worst case scenario, you have to sue them and take damages and... Like if the lady did not show up to court, we would have enough damages to get that property for free for the $26,000 we gave her.
Yeah, it's a $600,000 property. We invited her to court with some documents that said that we're seeking $250,000 in damages. So or we're seeking zero in damages if you come here and close.
That's it. That's it. So it's definitely 303 stuff. don't do what we say. Don't do what we do.
Yeah, if you're gonna do a high flying tightrope act like that, at least bring us in. What we've been finding some people, even in this mastermind, I don't know if they're in this room right now, are doing. They're going out and contracting stuff, weird deals. We haven't even comped it or vetted it with them. And then making these crazy promises like closing 60 days, 90 days. We haven't even seen it yet. So yep. If you guys are going to do anything crazy, come see us first. That's what we're here for. That's what this meeting's about.
We'll be the doctor. I talked to Chris today. I told him the same thing. He's like, I'm going to go contract a deal. I'm like, no, please don't do that. Please don't do it. Just seek advice first. You'll learn faster and become better when you seek advice.
Angie's asking if we need any option period. We're offering $1 million cash for 160 acres here in San Antonio South. I asked for a 14-day option, I think it was. And then this 243 we just closed on, I sent it in with no option at all. 10,000 earnest money, no option.
It's because the deal was a deal. It was a steal at a price. So it depends on it. You can, the terms are always negotiable based off of how big of a discount you think you're getting it at. So if you want to come in hard and heavy, you can do the non-refundable, you can do the no option period, you can do all that stuff. I think even that when we close in 60 days.
I told her I needed 30 days of due diligence and a 60-day close, and she sent it back like in a 50-day close or something, and I still bought it. Like, we're buying this deal. So it really just depends on how hot the deal is, how juicy it is. It depends how much we would risk and how much terms, the terms we need, due diligence, that kind of stuff. So like, a lot of the stuff we talk about is like, you know, we've just been doing it for a while, so we know what our comfort level is, right? So if you buy a 243-acre tract to do entitlements for a neighborhood, there's not a buyer in the country that's going to agree to buy that thing until they have their approvals for the water, the approvals for the electric. There's probably 6 months worth of due diligence needed on that lot. But since it's in my area, it's in San Antonio, I know the area very well, a very desirable area that we just did a subdivide in and sold it really quick. We just bought it before any of that stuff, any of it, because I'm not worried about the approvals. I know it's going to get approved. And just put it that way. And then, well, how do you know? Like, I just know just from working in this area, and we've been doing it so long. So,
and the caveat to that is worst case scenario, we'll still make seven figures on it.
Yeah. Even if we had to dump it in 10 acre lots, it's still $1 million deal. So
worst case scenario,
if we fire sold it, it would make $1 million. So yeah, that's just, like I said, just use us that we're here. We're here operating. Edward, Peter's on here. There's quite a few people that send us deals to look at almost daily. So it would take you guys sending us a handful of deals. We'll critique them, help you run numbers, and tell you what we like and what we hate about it. And then you'll start to get better and better. Now Peter sent me, like, I think 4 or 5 hot deals in a row. So it just takes refining it. If you haven't been frustrated yet, you're not working hard enough. You should have, if you hit a wall and you're pissed off and you feel like you've been working too hard and not getting any results, now you're getting close.
It takes time. It takes time and a lot of effort. I think we've had a few students there. They're getting, Peter says, I'm frustrated daily and I love it. it's one of those things where, like, you gotta look at a few opportunities, and there's so many out there. And this is one thing I really want to hit on towards the end of the call, is that there's so much opportunity out there. We can, us as the land buyers bringing the cash and doing all this due diligence, we can buy better deals. So we want to really drill down to buy better opportunities that make better spreads that everybody's going to win guaranteed.
Yeah, I'll tell you this right now, guys, before we go. Last night, Daniel and myself drew up a sheet to send over to one of our investors, and we put about 10, 11 deals on that sheet. Total sales of breaking down those lots and reselling them is aiming towards $100 million, like in 10 deals, profit. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to count, but a lot of those deals are listed deals that are on the market.
Most of them are.
You don't even have to pull the list and go out there and market. I mean, they're literally like shooting fish in a barrel. It's just knowing what to look for. How do you know what to look for? Being on these calls and just sending us deals. And just sending us deals, we'll shoot them down in 5 minutes for you if they're no good, and we'll let you know why.
Yeah. Yep. And the bigger the deal, the more you can get creative financing.
Yeah, the more you can manipulate the numbers. There's nobody coming. You talk to the guy. He says, oh, they got to get the whole million or they're not going to do the deal. Okay, tell them we don't want it. Go ahead and send in your offer for $1 million. Let them stare at it. Call us back when they're ready. And that's it. I don't know if you guys know this, but when you send an offer to an agent, by law, they have to show the seller. So no matter what they say about your offer, send it over, get it in front of them. If they say, no, they're not going to do it, okay, have a nice day. Follow up with them in 90 days. The deal's not going anywhere. All these deals have been listed for 6 months, 9 months, a year. They really are just sitting out there doing nothing. There's no buyers for this thing.
That's it. No buyers. No buyers and a lot of opportunities. So make sure you're picking out the best deals. We're going to make a lot of money this year. And hope you all learned something today. I know we had a couple of new people on today's call, so hope you all learned some good stuff. All right. Hit us on the Facebook group. We'll see you all next week. Bye, guys.